Welcome to Torah Timecha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Shaiwitz, and I have the privilege of learning Megillat Eicha with you. The Gemara attributes the authorship of Eicha to Yirmiyahu, the prophet who lived during the time of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash in 586 BCE. Elie Wiesel said about Yirmiyahu, "I'm fascinated by Jeremiah because he first saw the tragedy, he lived through the tragedy, and he told the tragedy." Yirmiyahu is the ultimate survivor, and it makes sense that Elie Wiesel related to Yirmiyahu. Part of being a survivor is working through the tragedy, something that both Wiesel and Yirmiyahu attempted to do. And in this particular book, the Book of Eicha, Yirmiyahu addresses people who are bewildered by what's happened to them and who are grappling with very serious questions. These are questions that don't have simple answers, and Yirmiyahu doesn't try to package it all up neatly with a bow. Instead, he gives his people the greatest gift. He gives them a voice to express their pain, confusion, and their anger. He speaks in the voice of the people, enabling them to express and to feel. Giving a voice to the victim resonates with us from projects like the Shoah Foundation, which give a voice to tens of thousands of survivors who recorded their stories. In the process of filming Schindler's List, Steven Spielberg reflected, "I realized that there were many stories that needed to be told." Ultimately, the goal of the Shoah Foundation became to tell stories in order to develop empathy, understanding, and respect through testimony. As we learn Eicha together, we'll ask this question about Yirmiyahu. What story is he collecting, and what's the purpose of collecting this particular story? We'll have a different answer as we look at the different chapters. Before we begin with Perek Aleph, I want to note that there is a unique structural feature of Eicha, which is that the first four Perekim follow an Aleph-Bet structure, which each Pasuk following a letter of the Aleph-Bet, from Aleph until Tav. And the Midrash asks a question, "Lama nichtav ha-sefer hazeh kisidur chaf-bet otiot sheba Aleph-Bet?" Why is this book written in the order of the 22 letters of the alphabet? And the Midrash offers a number of answers. I want to read you one of them. The Midrash says, "Ba'u kol hadorot v'chol ha'otiot v'chol habriot sheba'olam elyonim v'tachtonim v'amdu al hatzarot v'al hara'ot sheigiu Yisrael." Came all the generations, all the letters, all the creations in the world, that is, this world, the terrestrial world, the upper worlds, and they all stood and they bared witness, they brought testimony to the suffering and the bad things that had happened to Yisrael. And in this way, the Midrash raises the possibility that the Aleph Bet structure expresses the enormity of the tragedy of the Korban. It required everybody, all the letters reflected even in the alphabet, to tell the story of the enormity of the Korban. And yet, at the same time, Yirmiyahu, how does Yirmiyahu express, how does he find words to express this vastness? And Rav Moshe Lichtenstein brings a different type of answer, in a way raising the limited aspect of bringing the 22 letters of the alphabet. And he suggested that the alphabet provided a structure for Yirmiyahu, a way for him to begin to give words to something that feels so enormous that it almost can't be captured. Perek Aleph of Eicha zooms in on the post-Korban reality. What does life look like after the destruction of the temple, after the exile? And Perek Aleph expresses the loneliness of Jerusalem by using words like Ein Menachem, there is no comforter. That becomes like a motif of the Perek. Those words keep repeating. But he also does this by using female metaphors to capture the loneliness of Jerusalem in the wake of this tragedy. He begins, Eicha yashva badad ha'ir rab te'am haitaka almana. How, Eicha, the word that begins actually three of the prakim of Eicha, but how is it that the city that was busy, that was bustling, that was majestic, is now like a widow. Jerusalem is like a widow. She sits alone. She cries. She has no one to comfort her. But who is Jerusalem mourning? Is it her people who were killed or exiled? Is it the nations that she relied on, always clinging to the hope that they would save her from Babylonia, but who never actually came through? Or is Jerusalem mourning her distance from Hashem, from God, who feels absent in her life in the wake of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and after all the tragedies that have befallen her? These multiple possibilities here let us feel the enormity of Jerusalem's loss. Most people who are confronting loss rely on the support systems that they still have to help them get through it. But here, the loss is all-encompassing. Jerusalem has lost everything. The next image that Yirmiyahu uses to describe the loss of Jerusalem and her loneliness is a mother who has lost her children. He says, Ki Hashem hoga arov pisha'eha, oleha hochushevi lifnei tzar. Because Hashem has afflicted Jerusalem for her sins, her infants, her babies, have gone into captivity. And who doesn't empathize with that image of a mother who's lost her children? And yet here, the narrator introduces a tension into our empathy. We learn that it was the hand of God that did this, that caused this, as a punishment for the sins of Yerushalayim. Who then is responsible? Is it Hashem? Is it the enemy? Or perhaps is it Jerusalem herself? And if it is Jerusalem, do we still empathize with her? Half of Perek Aleph of Eicha describes Yerushalayim in the third person. But when we reach Pasuk Yud Aleph, there's a change. Instead of the third person voice of the narrator, Yerushalayim herself jumps in. The description of her pain and her loneliness has provoked within her this emotional cry. And she turns to Hashem saying, Re'ei Hashem, v'habita, ki hayiti zolila. Hashem, look at me. See how disgraced I've been. But she continues then by turning on Hashem, accusing Hashem of setting a trap for her and handing her over to her enemies. Enemies that she then prays will never experience what she went through. The narrator responds then, jumps in by describing Yerushalayim's abandonment. She stretches out her hand to all those who pass by her, but no one comforts her. Ein menachem la. She is humiliated and rejected by all. Jerusalem responds to this with words that close the perek. Tzadik hu Hashem ki pihu mariti. God is righteous because I have rebelled against him. Karati lema'ahavai v'hema rimuni. I called out to my lovers, those who I thought would save me. And they have also disgraced me. They have not come through. They've betrayed me. And she ends by entreating Hashem to punish her enemies, those same passerbyers, for all that they have done to her. Let's return now to our original question. What was the purpose of recording these voices and recording them in this way? Why does Yirmiyahu fluctuate between capturing the first-person testimony of Jerusalem and also using the more objective description of the narrator? So first of all, Jerusalem needed to hear a description of her pain before she could formulate her own emotional reaction. She was silent, but then Yirmiyahu did this for her. He described her pain and honored it by noting it in all of its force. This gave Jerusalem the ability to have a voice, to express all that she went through. But the narrator here plays another role as well. And this I would call maybe the role of tough love. When Jerusalem blesses her passerbyers, those who are observing her tragedy, and expresses her anger towards Hashem, the narrator calls her on it, noting the fallacy of this dependency. When she reaches out to those passerbyers, they ignore her. Those are not those who are beloved to you. And as hard as this is to hear, this gives Jerusalem a degree of clarity in her own responsibility, and it reignites her dependence on Hashem. But there is a third role, I think, that this perek provokes for us, and it's hidden beneath the surface. And this is the role for us, those who are reading Megillat Eicha. In her book on Eicha, Adele Berlin writes very poignantly, "The image of the city woman in her abject state elicits both revulsion and pity. As we watch her, and the poet forces us to watch her, we are torn by ambivalent urges. We cannot bear to look, but we cannot turn our eyes away. The more we look, the more we shame her by seeing what should not be seen. But we must look, because the poet calls on us to see what's happening to the city and partake in her suffering. We, meaning here it's the readers, us, we become actors in the drama of the story. We become mourners along with Jerusalem. Yet, with all this mourning, there is no comforter, suggesting that the process of mourning cannot be completed. This chapter is a plea for comfort in the absence of the comforter." According, she quotes here, Gary Anderson, one of the definitions of comfort in its technical, ritualized sense is assuming the state of mourning alongside the mourner. Perek Aleph is not only for Yerushalayim, for Jerusalem, to express her pain, but it's also for us. Yirmiyahu tells us the story of Jerusalem, but he doesn't just tell it to us, he demands from us. We, as the readers, must mourn with Jerusalem, filling the role of that missing comforter. Jerusalem says, "Ein la menachem," she has no comforter. We then must step into that role. And by honoring the testimony and hearing from the survivors, we also give comfort to the mourners. Thank you for learning Eicha Perek Aleph with the OU Women's Initiative. I look forward to learning with you tomorrow.